You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You guys see this story with Brad Beal? TMZ Sports says that the police are investigating an altercation after a recent game.
That happened in the arena or outside the arena?
TMZ reporting shooting guard Bradley Beal, a three-time NBA All-Star, is under police investigation after he was involved in a confrontation with some hecklers following a game last week. The complaint against Beal was lodged on March 22nd, according to the Orlando Police Department. Okay, so this is in Orlando. The dispute between Beal and the fans arose right after the 29-year-old Hooper was walking down a tunnel to the Wizards locker room area at Amway Center. So it was in the arena, I mean.
Wait, so why did he hit him? What'd he say?
One of the guys, according to TMZ Sports, in a group, yelled at Beal, quote, "You f***ed me out of $1,300, you f***." And I'm just guessing it's f*** because it's F star star star.
Well, I mean,
today's theme is fraud, so it could have been you frauded me out of $1,300.
You frauding fraud.
Oh, there's more. Beal then turned, walked away towards the fans, and appeared to knock the hat off one of the guys' heads in response to the heckle.
Look, man, done deal. You got your hat slapped off your head.
My hat!
All right, man, grow up. Stop talking shit.
Beal and the fans then jawed back and forth, with Beal calling the comment, quote, disrespectful. Keep it a buck, Beal said. I don't give a fraud about none of your bets or your parlays, bro. That ain't why I play the game.
That reminds me of that part of the Kyrie Twitch stream. The first topic he tackled was gambling.
You know, gambling and sports betting has completely taken the purity away and the fun away from the game at times. I'm just be honest with y'all. So, like, work is work, but the support around it can be very distracting. You know what I mean? There's a difference between being a diehard fan and supporting your team and loving your team versus somebody that's betting on a parlay or somebody that wants to hit. And don't get me wrong, I don't want anybody wasting their money on me. But God dang, like, this whole community of gamblers that's coming to the game of basketball, why don't you gamble on something that makes sense to you? And if you gamble on me, I'm not going to tell you whether it's a good gamble or a bad gamble. I'm just saying, you gambling.
I'm gambling again.
You're going to win or lose. But that doesn't mean sliding into people's DMs or wishing bad on them or doing the extra shit that goes on, man. It blows my mind sometimes. You feel me?
Players don't like this stuff, man.
To be fair, knowing a couple of absolute degenerate gamblers, they seem to think that everybody cares about gambling the way they do. And I'm not talking about the people that they gamble on. I'm talking about society. I remember 4 years ago, one of these betting houses sends these emails to me. They still do, like, routinely saying, hey, the odds for, you know, who's going to get that 8 seed is 6-1 and da-da-da, like that. And I remember, like, taking that tweet, like, oh, the championship odds are this, according to so-and-so. And all these gamblers are, that's a bogus house. And I'm like, I don't give a shit, man. You think I care? They really think everybody's as invested in this ride as they are. It is quite possibly the most myopic sector in sports, more than anything else, more than super fandom of a player, more than super fandom of a team. Gamblers think everybody gives a shit about gambling like they do.
No. I mean, you forgot fantasy owners.
More than fantasy.
Because they got skin in the game. They're gambling again.
$1,300 on an Orlando-Washington game. I don't think the problem is Bradley Beal. Okay?
It's a parlay. Hold on, Tom. It's probably a parlay.
Then if it's a parlay, it's not $1,300 that you lost. It's $3.
No. They could have won $1,300, what they're saying.
You didn't lose it if you never had it.
But if you spent it, then you lost it, even if you didn't have it.
But the battery here, he flicked the guy's hat off his head. They're calling it simple battery.
Is that battery? Were you battered?
The alleged victim told cops he wants to press charges against Beal, and police noted there was enough probable cause to charge Bradley with, quote, simple battery, saying, quote, charges will be filed at large with the state attorney's office.
You know what it sounds like? This guy, the fan in question who's pressing charges and complaining about Beal costing him money, sounds like this guy's a little bit of a bitch. Excuse me. Sounds like this guy is exhibiting the behavior of a little bit of a bitch.
Good save, Amin.
Thank you.
My assignment. Uncover why the association inspires more conspiracy theories in volume and salience than any other U.S. sport.
Hey, you've heard of the Illuminati.
The truth is out there, but so are lies.
Your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them.
The NBA has always been controlled by about 8 people.
Denial is the most predictable of all human responses.
If you're only using 10% of your brain, you don't even know that you're using 10% of your brain.
The NBA Illuminati.
If coincidences are just coincidences, why do they feel so contrived?
The Illuminati.
But you start to follow the money, and you don't know where the f*** it's going to take you.
It is unspoken. They have influence among other players.
The NBA Illuminati.
I don't have time for your convenient ignorance.
Maybe I'm a conspiracist now as well.
That's all it took. Oh, we got books, we got schools. You saw a video on YouTube.
Why am I, sir? I've never used them before.
We are the Basketball Illuminati.
This is Basketball Illuminati. I am Tom Haberstroh. And as always, I am joined by five-star generals Amin El Hassan and producer Anthony Mays. Oh, boy. This, my friends, my citizens out there, we have a doozy of an episode. A story that I don't think the mainstream media is covering enough. We are going to talk about four NBA players who are caught up in a case in which financial advisors, agents plotted schemes to steal money out of the pockets, millions of dollars out of the pockets.
They didn't just plot.
They went all the way in. And guess what? The FBI found out about it. It is a crazy story. We're bringing in sports lawyer Chase Carlson as our truth teller later in this episode, who represents pro athletes who have been defrauded or think they've been defrauded by crooked financial advisors and agents. We're going to bring Chase onto the show to talk about this story and the other ones that everyone else is too afraid to talk about. We're also going to go into the Rolodex and try to figure out who is the LeBron James of feet. But first,
you are listening to The Agenda with Tom Haberstroh and Amin El Hassan.
All right, so
No. We're not doing this today. Hold on. We got to talk about how Tom got his hand caught in the cookie jar and got slapped.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, it kind of felt like that. It kind of felt like you got slapped right in the bill of your cap.
Categorically slapped.
Oh, yeah. Simple battery out here on Tom Haberstroh.
I'd like a Bradley appeal on this for the record.
Okay. All right. So I'll give you the floor. Explain, set up the situation, how we ended up to where we ended up last week.
So on Tuesday last week, did a radio hit for the local Toronto sports station out there, had a great interview, and we talked about the Fred VanVleet rant, and I had done some of my own research that Ben Taylor's assignments, interestingly enough, he went from crew chief for most of the season, Ben Taylor, the target of Fred VanVleet's rants, who Fred VanVleet called being terrible. And of course, Toronto Raptors fans want to know about it. So I noticed in my research, I didn't see this anywhere else, that right after that game, right after that rant, Ben Taylor's assignments got a little bit worse. He went from the crew chief most of his games down to the second in command, the referee role of the crew. There's the crew chief, the referee, and the umpire. And as I told the Toronto Raptors audience, he was demoted in his assignments.
Demoted, Tom. That's an interesting word. Demoted.
I love that word.
How on earth did you land on that word?
Well, okay. On the radio hit, I said he was demoted in his assignments. What I should have said, maybe if I wasn't talking off the cuff on a radio hit in Canada, I could have used the word downgraded. He was downgraded from regularly being the crew chief, downgraded from that role, the head honcho of the crew, downgraded to referee. Sorry.
Wait, well, hold on. This feels like a very semantic argument, demoted versus downgraded. You said he's been a crew chief for most of the season. You said you did your own research. What are the numbers on that?
Well, in 19 of the previous 20 games, or if you want to go even further, 23 of the previous 25 games, Ben Taylor was the crew chief in 23 out of those 25 games.
And then what happened after that?
So after that, he was the referee in 5 out of the next 7 games.
I don't know about you, Maze. That sounds like a demotion to me.
As an aggregator, let's aggregate demotion.
Demoted ass.
Tom Haberstroh says Ben Taylor was demoted.
Demote that ass.
Aggregators. Mount up.
Not demoted. Not demoted. Stop using that word. It's downgraded, okay? NBA Central said he was demoted. They took out the context of the interview, and then that's what got me in trouble with, what's the account? NBA referee official.
Official, yeah. What they tweet, Tom? Read it out for us.
Well, can I just say for the record, I tweeted a clarification hours before this tweet came out.
That's not what was quote tweeted, Tom. At official NBA refs. This is categorically false. The schedule for the games referenced was released weeks in advance. Ben Taylor is a part-time crew chief, all caps, and frequently receives referee assignments throughout the season. His positional assignments remained unchanged. No mistakes, no coincidences, Tom.
I'm sorry. We might have a different definition of frequently. 19 out of the previous 20 games, he was the crew chief, not the referee. 23 out of the previous 25 games, he was the crew chief, and only 2 of those games, he was the ref. Frequently receives referee assignments?
Look at this guy. I mean, now he's the semantics police. What's going on here?
What? I'm just saying.
I don't know, Maze. Like, if you told me a guy was starting for 23 out of 25 games, and then all of a sudden, 5 of the next 7 games, he's coming off the bench, that shit sounds like a demotion. I'm not here.
Downgraded. Downgraded. I mean.
I'm sorry. Yes. Downgraded. I'm sure it was just downgraded. Tom, let me ask you this. They said the schedules were published weeks in advance. Where?
Yeah. So, I mean, great question. We don't have access to those schedules. We're not privy to that information. That's sent just to the officials. Hey, here's what you're going to be looking at, is what I'm told. For the next few weeks, 2 weeks at a time, here's what your schedule looks like. So according to the NBA official union Twitter, he got his scheduled well in advance. And it's just a coincidence that he started having a downgrade in his assignments right after the Fred VanVleet. It was all written.
I got to admit, Tom, this is beautiful data that you've visualized here with this big red line of the Fred VanVleet press conference. This breaking point of correlation reminds me of this Lakers free throw disparity thing I've seen floating around on the interwebs.
Oh, yes. Yes. This has become a pretty big story. After the Suns lost to the Lakers, Monty Williams came out and said this at the press conference.
46 free throws. We're doing the same. We're attacking the rim. I'm getting explanations about we're taking too many jump shots, mid-range jump shots. Like, we're playing a physical game. They had 27 free throws in the first half. They end up with 46. When do you see a game with 46 free throws for one team? Like, that's just not, that's not right. I don't care how you slice it. It's happening to us too much. Other teams are reaching. Other teams are hitting. And we're not getting the same call. And I'm tired of it. It's old.
And this dude is as mild-mannered as it comes. So when Monty Williams needs to speak on something, it's a pretty big threshold for him to cross. And he was alleging that the referees have it out for the Suns and that something else going on here, alluding to some sort of bias, some sort of larger thing that's happening, which is the free throw disparity, 46 to 20. But then you look at the data, this has been happening all season long, where the Lakers have had a large free throw disparity throughout the season. And wait a minute, let me just actually chart this.
That's pretty glaring, a pickup in the calls there.
Huh.
Well, this graph is not a steady increase. There's an interesting spike here late November, early December. And then there's another spike, Tom. And when does this other spike start happening?
It starts happening around the Boston game. Yeah, there was a big jump in the Lakers' free throws right around the end of January.
Lakers-Boston end of January. Was that the game with the Jason Tatum slap down on LeBron's wrist on the potential game-winning layup?
Yes, that's it, yeah.
Wait a second. So you mean to tell me, that all of a sudden the Lakers start going to the free throw line ever so often right after the refs blew a ridiculous call? One of the worst non-calls I have ever seen in my entire career.
All right, Stephen A., I'm just noting that this jump, yeah, it seemed to happen right after. Oh, it wasn't about that call. What else happened that night? What?
Well, I believe the refs tweeted that night.
Are we talking about this Twitter account again? At official NBA refs?
They're active, aren't they? So socially engaged.
On January 29th, like everyone else, referees make mistakes. We made one at the end of the last night's game, and that is gut-wrenching for us. This play will weigh heavily and cause sleepless nights as we strive to be the best referees we can be.
Sounds like to me, guys, Laker opponent free throws got demoted right after that game.
Downgraded,
my bad.
Right after that game in which the Celtics had 19 more free throws than the Lakers, Lakers played at Brooklyn, and here was the free throw differential. Lakers, 37. Brooklyn Nets, 19. That's plus 18.
Double.
And then a couple days after that, against Indiana, plus 25. These are the free throw differentials after that tweet. Plus 6, plus 3, plus 14, plus 8, plus 12, plus 13, plus 14, plus 6, plus 15, plus 8, plus 4. How many games is that in a row? How many was that?
How many games?
13 games in a row that they had more free throws than their opponent. Just so happened to be right after that Boston game. Wow. 14 out of the next 15 games, they had a positive free throw differential. And then in the last few games, they had plus 18, plus 12, plus 15, plus 26. I here declare this trend is categorically true.
Oh, look at him getting cheeky. I mean, Mr. Semantics himself.
Now it's time for Annie's secret message for you members of the Secret Circle. Remember, kids, only members of Annie's Secret Circle can decode Annie's secret message.
You can break the code.
Maybe I take a shot at it, maybe I break it. I'm real happy with myself because I did my job well.
There's only one hacker in the world who can break this code.
Super string theory, chaos math, advanced algorithms.
Code breaking.
Strange, the code is somehow different.
It's like solving a Rubik's Cube that's fighting back.
Whoop-de-doo! What does it all mean, Basil?
When people talk to each other, they never say what they mean. They say something else. And you're expected to just know what they mean.
Break the code.
You are, quite simply, the best natural code breaker I've ever seen.
This has got to be the craziest code breakers we've ever had on this show. Maze, when you saw the LeBron James of feet, quote, did you think it was made for Basketball Illuminati? Like, did you think the script was written just for us?
There's the actual fascination with who this mysterious podiatrist could be. But there's also just a bounty of jokes to be made about what qualifies someone to be the LeBron James of anything. Does it mean that this doctor skipped medical school and went straight to practicing because he was so prodigious at his knowledge of how the foot works? Does it mean that he's the oldest doctor
and doing it the longest,
practicing at an extremely high level? What does it mean?
Is he the greatest foot doctor, but not quite, because there was another foot doctor who did it really well 30 years ago, and we're in an endless argument about which one is actually the better foot doctor?
Did he leave his practice in Ohio to work on the flashy feet of South Beach?
Only to return back to his original Ohio and make his practice the best practice in all the land.
What does it mean?
It's a guy who thought he was really good at his job, but decided he needed to go to acting school, maybe, to do better things at his job.
He wasn't satisfied with just working on feet.
Was he a doctor who only read the first page of every medical book, never actually completing the book?
And is often seen reading them.
Yes.
I don't know. I think you're kind of belittling his job as a doctor. I think he's more than a doctor, this LeBron James of feet.
Just shut up and diagnose my injuries.
Did anyone ever suggest surgery?
Yeah, two doctors.
Why did you decide against it?
Because I went to LeBron James of feet. And he told me I should.
So who is the LeBron James of feet? This has been such a mystery to me.
So here's the interesting thing. I was watching Pat McAfee, as I've been known to do famously all the time. And they had our buddy Sean Charani on.
There's this rumor out there that he went to Germany. I'm going to debunk it. I'm told he did not go to Germany.
Nine!
There might have been some travel, but it was not to Germany. So man, that might debunk a lot of theories online.
Okay, so this is cryptic.
Mm.
This is why we make code breakers.
This is a code inside a code.
Shams, you know, friend of the program, just creating more content for us. He could have spelled it out, but he made us break the code.
So everybody out there is obviously assuming, before this Shams news update, that the LeBron James of feet is German. That LeBron went to Germany, got his feet looked at by this German foot doctor.
German engineering.
And now Shams is squashing it, saying, no, 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 he didn't go to Germany.
Because we know Kobe Bryant used to do this. He used to fly to Germany.
Yes.
To go see specialists who would do a certain blood spinning PRP knee injection.
They inject PRP rich platelets into his knee after they put in a centrifuge.
And that treatment was not legal at the time, and so he would have to fly.
To be clear, not legal in the United States by the FDA, legal according to the NBA and the World Anti-Doping Agency. It was completely legal in the terms of the sport. It's just the medical practice itself was not yet legal in the United States because of no FDA clearance.
But where did this rumor that Shams is talking about, where did this rumor begin? This whole German doctor.
Does seem out of the blue, right?
Out of the purple?
Out of the purple and gold. Out of perhaps the mouth of one German national. Dennis Schröder, play the clip.
I can't say too much, but German doctors are great. That's what I'm saying.
This was 2 weeks ago. Dennis Schröder offering the clue. Why is everyone being so coy here? Why is everyone being so cagey? Why can't they just name the guy?
So this is what we know. We know LeBron went to the LeBron James of feet doctors. We know that this doctor, because there was a rumor that he went to Germany. So we're going to assume that this doctor is German. But according to Shams, LeBron didn't have to go to Germany. This doctor is German, but he's here in the United States.
Oh.
Is there any other unraveling we can do for this story to kind of narrow down perhaps a name for this mystery doctor?
Well, why don't we go back to the source, the whistleblower, Dennis Schröder, giving us a clue once again. I don't know if you guys know this. Dennis Schröder is a content creator. He is a YouTube sensation.
Is he?
Well, I mean, I don't know, sensation. I don't know if that's categorically true or false. Oh. But
you're demoting that take, Tom?
I downgraded him.
Okay.
Downgraded, okay?
All right.
Hidden inside a kernel within a crumb within a whiff in his vlog. March 5th was the YouTube vlog where he talked about going to a Lil Baby LA concert with Travis Scott.
Yeah, Rolling Loud.
Jetzt zum Training. Video gucken wir viel Film. Dann werde ich heute von Dr. Miller-Wolfert behandelt. Der ist in LA, der war gestern beim Spiel. Und dann gehen wir heute zu Rolling Loud.
Tom, why are you giving me clips in German? How does this help anyone? Now we have to break the code on the clip within the Codebreaker segment? Come on!
Too much codes.
No, no, no. Apparently, if you hit the CC button on YouTube, it gives us the translation here. So the closed captioning, we get a translation.
So what does it say?
Damn it, Tom. We don't speak German. You know this.
We're on our way to practice, and there I will get treatment by Dr. Mueller Wolfart. He's in LA. He watched the game yesterday, and after that, we will go to Rolling Loud. End translation, end babblefish. Who is that? Dr. Mueller Wolfart?
Wolfart?
Really hitting that fart. I think it's Wolfart. Put the art in there.
Got it. Art.
Let me just back up here because if you look at the tape, we're breaking codes here. We're doing the detective work. Travis Scott, Lil Baby were appearing on Saturday, March 4th. And then later in that episode, we hear Dr. Wolfart, his name mentioned again. Let's go to the clip.
Tom.
It's in German again, Tom.
Just tell me what he said.
Okay. What he said was, quote, "As I already said, today I will be meeting with Dr. Mueller Wolfart. He will come to your house to do some treatment. And after that, we will go to the concert." Oh, but this is really interesting. He doesn't show Dr. Mueller Wolfart. Doesn't show him. So he's showing everything else on the vlog, but doesn't show the actual doctor.
Wait, so does this guy even exist? Do we have any record for a Dr. Mueller Wolfart? Does he live in LA?
I'm glad you asked. This guy is so fascinating. He's a guy that Kobe saw. The Team Kobe website used to actually document and cover the fact that Kobe Bryant would go see Dr. Mueller Wolfart. And this guy is so mysterious and so connected to this world of performance enhancing, whether it's legal or not, that in 2011, Dr. Mueller Wolfart was profiled by one of the top ESPN investigators, Mike Fish. Went to Germany himself, this writer, to go talk to this guy who everyone knows as Healing Hans.
Get it? Because it's Hans, but it's like a German name, Hans.
Yes, he is the guy for Usain Bolt.
Wait, I thought we were looking for the LeBron James of feet, not the LeBron James of Hans.
Well, the Hans is what he uses to heal. The feet is what his enemies experience whenever they challenge him. Ha ha, more jokes coming your way.
If you listen back to that clip, LeBron James has like a little bit of a pregnant pause there when he goes, the LeBron of feet.
Feet.
So maybe he wanted to say Hans, but he didn't want to give away the goods for free.
So this guy, you said he worked with Kobe. He worked with Usain Bolt.
Bono too, by the way.
The Bono?
Not just a Bono. Not the downgraded Bono, but the full-blown Bono.
I'm looking at this Mike Fish investigative piece that you shared with us. It says here he's been the team doctor for Bayern Munich for like 20 plus years.
Ah, football.
So this is his claim to fame. He's a soccer doctor. It says here he's so famous that he gets stopped in the street and people take pictures with him. What team physician in the United States or physician of any sort that works with players is so famous that they're recognizable by face? Because I know some names. Dr. James Andrews, he's famous, right? He does a lot of surgeries.
Yeah.
Dr. Lisa Callahan was a doctor for the Knicks. I know Dr. Tom Carter was a doctor for the Suns.
Oh, and our guy, Dr. Brian Sutterer, he initially thought it was Dr. Robert Anderson. He's a well-known physician who does surgery for the Carolina Panthers, NFL players. He's got an office in Wisconsin.
Here's my question, Tom. If you lined up Dr. James Andrews and Dr. Robert Anderson and Dr. Tom Carter, would you be able to tell them apart? And Dr. Wolfhard, even. Do you know what any of these people look like?
I don't know.
But this guy is so famous, he can't even walk the streets of Munich without getting stopped.
Well, what's also interesting about this guy, I mean, according to this ESPN profile, one apparent issue, and I'm quoting, was Mueller Wolfhard's increasing reliance on injections. In simple terms, he believes in avoiding surgery.
Huh.
Whereas another doctor is of the mind that injections serve as a mere stopgap in putting off the inevitable need for surgery. That's interesting.
So now the plot thickens a little bit more, right? Because LeBron, at first, it was rumored, needed surgery. In fact, that's what he said in the sound.
He saw two doctors.
Two doctors, and they both recommended surgery. And then he talked to the LeBron James of feet. And that doctor said, you don't need surgery. Now, Mueller uses a lot of injections. What's he injecting exactly, Tom?
It's a secret sauce. He's not really one to expound on his treatments. And that's one of the issues with Dr. Mueller Wolfart is a lot of his stuff, as profiled by ESPN, it doesn't pass the peer-reviewed scientific evidence test.
Well, it doesn't pass it. Because he hasn't submitted it for peer review. It's not like it's taking the test and failing. It is choosing not to take the test at all. And that makes this eminently more interesting. This dude is using a secret treatment that has not been vetted anywhere other than by his own trial and error. And that's what he says. He's very upfront about that. yeah, I haven't submitted it because I'm too busy helping people. That's his excuse. That's what he's running with.
Oh, but there's this perfect scene at the end of this ESPN profile. I need to read it to you guys. The scene is repeated later to a lesser degree when he stops to proudly show a reporter Englischer Garten, Munich's lush equal of Central Park in New York or Hyde Park in London. Mueller Wolfhard suggests a trek deep into the park to a popular beer garden. Less than 10 minutes in, the doctor's knee gives out.
Dum, dum, dum.
He's limping badly. He's supporting himself with his right hand on the reporter's shoulder. He's shaking his knee, wildly kicking it out to the side, manages to, quote, get it back in place and resist the suggestion to call it a day. He soldiers on to the beer garden. Along the way, he reveals having had surgery on his other knee last year. So finally, it turns out the well-preserved doctor with the normally peppy gait is human. He too copes with aches and pains. And while he's still swearing by the odds, his trained hands and injected medicines can't cure all. He acknowledges surgery can't always be avoided.
Oh, interesting stuff. Also interesting, he does have a U.S. partnership with a very well-known doctor, Dr. Stedman of the Stedman Clinic. You guys know where the Stedman Clinic is located?
Oh, no.
I don't. Where is it, Amin?
Oh, no.
Vail, Colorado. Now, where have I heard the name of Vail, Colorado before? Well, that's where old Kobe Bryant went when he was rehabbing from his injury, when he was accused of sexual assault. It was in Vail, Colorado at the Stedman Clinic. So you see here a connection between this doctor, the Los Angeles Lakers, both past and present, in Kobe and Dennis Schroeder, plus the caginess of answers by LeBron, by Schroeder, and by Shams Charania. I think we can go ahead and categorically say that the LeBron James of feet is, in fact, Dr. Wolfhard of Munich, Germany.
No, it's Dr. Hans, the LeBron of Hans.
Healing Hans, my bad. It's Dr. Healing Hans of Munich, Germany. Have we broken the code?
Yeah, until LeBron breaks the news.
And then tells us it was actually Dr. Robert Patterson all along.
You all think I'm licked. Well, I'm not licked. And I'm going to stay right here and fight for this lost cause, even if this room gets filled with lies like these. And the tailors and all their armies come marching into this place. Somebody will listen to me.
There's no better way to overpower a trickle of doubt than with a flood of naked truth.
But the complexity and the gray lie not in the truth, but what you do with the truth once you have it.
What is true and right is true and right for all.
You and I both know that that's just not the truth.
You can't handle the truth!
It's too messy. Keeps them up nights.
I'm here because in the end, the truth is worth the risk.
Speak a little truth and people lose their minds.
I'm a grown man. You can tell me the truth.
Why is it people who want the truth never believe it when they hear it?
So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do something really outrageous. I'm going to tell the truth.
All right, let's get on the horn with our next truth teller. I mean, Maze, is this our first lawyer on the program?
Ooh. We might have had someone who had a law degree, but a practicing lawyer? No, this is our first.
Attorney General of the Illumination. Chase Carlson.
Chase Carlson joining us this week to talk about a story that came across the wire, national news.
Now, Tom, before you get into a flowery intro and a setup of very serious things, I do have one very important pressing question for Chase, which is, does your father know he's the last of a dying breed? White man named Curtis. I read that and I had to do double. Wait a second. I scroll back through the notes like, yeah, his dad's name is Curtis.
Well, so is my brother's. So we're going to keep it going.
Oh, wow. Keep it going. There you go.
Yeah, keep it going. It's still alive. Alive and well. Well, Chase, flowery intro. Your name came across my radar a few years ago when Patrick Ruby, a friend of ours on the program, who's actually been on this show before talking about conspiracy theories in the NBA and David Stern and the Frozen Envelope. He did an amazing job investigating that story. He also did a Washington Post feature on you a few years back in 2019, when athletes think they've been defrauded or stolen from, they go see this guy. And that's you, Chase, in South Florida. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what's this latest story all about? What do you know about it? And how can you explain what went down here? Because the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, and the Southern District of New York, the DA, released a public statement, a press release, saying that they have arrested four individuals who are alleged to have stolen millions of dollars from NBA players, former NBA players and current NBA players. And that is a bombshell. That's a big story here.
Yep. All too common. This one is pretty wild. There's a lot of different aspects to it. But basically, this guy, Daryl Cohen, was a financial advisor out in LA. He was working with some of the top basketball players in the country. And there's like four scams here. One of the scams, his son played for a youth basketball group. He asked two of his NBA clients to donate to the youth program.
Well, that's nice.
Both of them declined, saying we already have our own youth basketball programs. The financial advisor then went on to wire $500,000 out of their accounts to the program anyway. And then the program used that money to build like a gym at the financial advisor's house and other things. So you had that theft of $500,000, which the player only found out when he was joining a golf club and they asked him, you know, what kind of donations have you made? And he had to go get a record of all his donations. And he found out he made this massive donation he didn't even know about. Then you had, they were selling these life settlements, which is when you buy someone else's insurance policy. So you're buying someone's existing insurance and waiting for them to die. And they sold these investments to three NBA players.
Wait, you can short human life?
You can short human life. So in this case, they told one of the players, hey, look, this guy has been criminally indicted. He's probably going to kill himself. This is a good investment. I mean, it was really bad stuff. But that's not even the bad part, is that they marked up the price on all these three policies by about $4.5 million that they took.
Oh.
So the player thought, say, I'm paying $1.5 million for this, but it really only cost $500,000.
And how is the player supposed to know about this? Because they didn't go get an MBA. You know, they're busy being the best athlete in the world, trying to win basketball games. And they're trusting these professionals, these financial advisors at big companies like Morgan Stanley. Like, this financial advisor is Daryl Cohen, and multiple media outlets have confirmed with the player's attorney that the players involved with this case, Drew Holiday, who's currently in the NBA and currently trying to win a championship with the Milwaukee Bucks, and former NBA players Chandler Parsons and Courtney Lee. The attorney for those athletes confirmed to the outlets that they were clients of Daryl Cohen. So Chandler, Drew Holiday, Courtney Lee, and other pro athletes, how are they supposed to know that these life insurance policy settlements or packages are marked up? Like, how are they supposed to know the actual price of those things?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard, especially in that market. It's a super opaque market where it's not like you can go and look at the price of these things like Apple stock. You have to find a guy that, you know, has access to them. And so, you know, especially in this market, it's really hard to figure out. But you nailed it. I mean, the players, they're super busy, focused on their craft. They find people they think they can trust. Unfortunately, sometimes they get taken advantage of.
Chase, in your experience, what's the proportion of players who get bilked out of money due to the ineptitude of the financial advisor versus outright fraud like what we're seeing in this FBI case?
I mean, that's a good question. I think that it's a balance. You know, sometimes the advisor will put somebody in a really bad investment by accident. And then sometimes it's on purpose. It's a blend. You know, it's probably like a 50-50. But the amount of players this is happening to, I think if you were to audit all the NBA players, you'd find half of them are getting taken advantage of one way or another, whether it's just overpaying in fees or outright being stolen from or put into fraudulent investments.
That's the shocking one, right? I think inflation of fees, I feel like a lot of people do that, especially when dealing with high value clients who don't have the time or inclination to go through with a fine-tooth comb and make sure everything's above board. Tom, to answer your question, how do they not get caught? The late, great Biggie Smalls said, I got lawyers watching lawyers, so I won't go broke. Like, it's the only way. You got to hire someone else to watch the watchdogs.
Right.
But I think the more shocking thing isn't the skimming here and there. It's the outright fraud. I think in the brief released by the FBI, one of the things was, the player was approached about a particular investment. He said no. And then the guy just took the money anyway.
Yeah.
That to me is the part that's really staggering, is the outright, not even like a creative white collar type of theft, just straight up gangster taking it anyway. And for at least a couple of the individuals in here, it would seem like they had some legitimate business and some legitimate reputation to kind of worry about. How shocking is it for you to read that and say, wow, they just literally risked it all in a very blatant, blunt, easy to uncover way?
It sounds just like unbelievable that somebody, you're talking about a guy who had a really good business, right?
Yeah.
Managing probably hundreds of millions of dollars, charging, let's just say on average, 1% a year. So the guy's making millions of dollars a year. He could literally just play golf all day and make millions of dollars.
Right.
And instead he, you know, does something crazy and blows himself up. And you would think, well, that could never happen. But I've seen it happen over and over and over again. Guys that are managing hundreds of millions of dollars that blow themselves up. This isn't the first one. It's so common. From the last 10 years, there's been 15 financial advisors working with athletes that have either been arrested or lost their license.
That we know of, right?
That's just licensed financial advisors. I'm not talking about agents. I'm not talking about business managers. I'm not talking about real estate agents.
How many athletes have you represented?
Over 50 when we're talking about financial mismanagement and fraud.
Wow. So this is way more common than just Drew Holiday and Chandler Parsons. I know of the high profile ones, of course, with Charles Barkley. Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett had one, a dispute with Charles Banks, where Tim Duncan found in his financials that, wait, where is this $7.5 million going? I had no idea about this. And then goes after his financial advisor. Once that guy was found guilty of fraud and put away in jail, Kevin Garnett, who had the same financial advisor, sued his accountant for $77 million because he can't go sue the financial advisor because he's in jail and he's got no money.
Right.
Those are high profile cases. But what you're describing, over 50 pro athletes, I don't think the audience realizes how prevalent this is.
No, it's very common. Ernst & Young did a study and they found from like 2014 to 2019, athletes lost almost $600 million to fraud. I have my own spreadsheet. And I think if I were to update it today, we'd be well over a billion.
Eesh.
And that's just reported. You know, a lot of this stuff, you never hear about it. There's arbitration agreements. There's pre-suit settlements, or no reporter ever just sees the docket, or the players don't do anything because they're embarrassed. Or like you just said, the criminal is a deadbeat, so it's not even worth suing them. And so we only see, you know, maybe a third of it, but there's a lot of it out there.
What should leagues do more to protect players, other than the seminar that they get in rookie transition program about, hey, don't trust your money with just anybody.
Right, right. You know, the leagues and the unions, they do some stuff. Like if you go to the league or the union and you ask them to do a background check, they'll do a background check for you. But I don't think they're so proactive. If I were in the union, I would say, look, there's only 400 NBA players or something. You know, let's sit down with each and every one of them and run a background check on every person they're working with. Let's offer audits. Audits can be done for cheap, you know, just a quick audit. Let's look at even the last 12 months and just see, was there any money that left your account that we don't know about? Or, you know, were you sold any crazy investments? So if I were in the union, that's what I would do. A lot more background checks, a lot more proactive stuff, you know, sitting down with the players and trying to get them to talk. Because just sitting back and doing nothing, obviously it's not working.
Part of the problem also is that the players, many of them, I shouldn't paint with a broad brush, but many of them are attracted to the big pie in the sky sales pitches from some of these financial advisor types. I know in that Washington Post profile on you that we read, it mentioned that originally you wanted to be on that side of the ledger. And you found that you were losing out to people who were saying, I could get you a 30% return guaranteed, which of course is preposterous. And I was having this conversation with a buddy of mine who works on the marketing side for a couple of NBA players. And one of the things expressed is you have to have a certain element of conspicuous consumption about yourself in order to sell the clients that you know what you're talking about. And so I wondered if that bleeds over also to the union and to the league, specifically the arms responsible for educating these incoming players and these young players. Is there an element of like, ah, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about, I got the guy?
Look, a lot of these guys that you read it, you know, they took advantage of players. They're really good salesmen. They're really slick. They're really good at convincing people. And so, yes, there is an element of that where even if you told the athlete, hey, I think there's some red flags here, they've been sold so well to this guy, and this guy's created such a bond that they might not listen.
So last year, Continuum Capital filed a lawsuit against Charles Briscoe, who is a former NBA agent, according to sportsagentblog.com, which is Darren Heitner's site. And in that Briscoe story in the lawsuit, Dwight Howard was named in it as a client of Briscoe's, as well as Chris Duarte from the Indiana Pacers. And that lawsuit mirrors pretty closely with the one that we're seeing from Southern District of New York's DA. One of the details in that press release last week was that one of the athletes wanted to purchase a WNBA team, or I should say a professional women's basketball team.
You're not sure.
For $7 million.
Right.
And couldn't do it under league rules because it's against league rules for NBA players to, and this is all alleged, and actually it doesn't say NBA in the press release, it says professional basketball league, but you get the idea.
At the same time, we can make a reasonable deduction because the NBA is the only league that has a rule like that regarding other NBA type properties like WNBA and G League. So ipso facto,
right,
we're talking about an NBA player trying to buy a WNBA team.
So as part of this, they had to put up a company because the player couldn't outright own the team. So there was an arrangement made where they set up this company and you can put $7 million into this, and then we'll arrange for that to be part of a purchase of a WNBA team. So you can have like one degree away from this.
Right.
And meanwhile, according to the DA, the press release, they were going to start an agency, a sports agency, but instead they used some of those funds to buy luxury goods for himself. This is Darden Jr., one of the ones charged, including approximately $880,000 to luxury car companies, more than $300,000 to art galleries, and more than $100,000 to purchase a piano, which I kind of feel like the feds like to put in these little details of like, part of it was to buy a grand piano. And then the next line was approximately $1 million in connection with purchasing and making improvements to a residence, including, among other things, the addition of a koi pond. I just love that.
The scammer brings people over and look how sophisticated I am. I have a grand piano.
Do you have stories like that, that you've almost been in awe of their audacity? They're trying to put up an image that they're legit, that they have a lot of money, and they're just scamming people. Are there examples like that in your history of representing these clients of pro athletes?
Yeah. I mean, if you look back, a lot of these scammers were very flashy. The guy that just got arrested, the financial advisor, was driving around in a Bentley. There was a guy from South Florida down here that lost a bunch of guys' money. He was driving a Bentley too. There was another guy in South Florida who lost players like $40 million. He was driving a Lambo. It is a red flag. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't notice that.
Jace, how many get away with it by your estimation?
A lot. You rarely actually see a criminal proceeding. A lot of these, it's just, you know, the money's gone. It's some deadbeat.
I'm not even talking about those where they get away with it in terms of there's no restitution for the aggrieved. Because my mind can't wrap, like, Charles Briscoe is a certified agent by the union. The moment he takes money, presumably to buy a WNBA team, and does not buy a WNBA team with it, rather spends money on a piano and all that stuff, there has to be something in the back of his mind that says there's an end game to this.
What is the end game here, though, Spence?
I'm no longer going to be doing my legitimate job, much like Cohen and Gilder. At some point, there has to be a realization. Again, we're not talking about skimming or kind of like some gray area stuff. Outright fraud and theft. There's got to be an end game where I escape this money because I can't keep doing this and not get caught, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think they're psychopaths. I don't think they acknowledge that they're going to get caught. I think that they either don't think about it at all or they think they'll just keep getting away with it.
And Drew Holiday and Chandler Parsons and Courtney Lee, they identified themselves to the New York Times last year and spoke out against this fraud. The Holidays, who by and large, I mean, you can attest to this, like one of the most beloved people in the league.
Beloved people. And let's just be clear. Drew Holiday comes from a very good family, middle class family, upper middle class. He went to a really good school, Campbell Hall High School. He went to UCLA. His parents both were collegiate athletes. So they've been around the fringes of the business. And then obviously his wife is also a pro athlete. This isn't the typical guy from inner city and never been around money. This would be the case study of, oh no, they can get educated people who've been around money in some levels. They can get those people too.
The statement that they provided, I mean, to your point, was We are all susceptible to being exploited by people like Daryl Cohen. We are disappointed that a company as well known as Morgan Stanley would enable someone like Mr. Cohen to be in a position that allowed him to move money out of our accounts the way he did. So, Chase, you want to get the word out that this is happening and you want to protect athletes. Of course, you obviously want to represent them and do right by them. But also, how much of this is just removing the stigma or the shame that people like the Holidays, like Amin said, highly educated people who have their hearts in the right place and are making amazing philanthropic contributions to society can get swindled like this?
Yeah, look, it's not just athletes. Doctors are some of the worst investors. Mm. And it's not an intelligence thing. If you talk to somebody on the street, they're going to tell you, oh, well, athletes are stupid. Well, that's not true. Most of them are geniuses. You know, you ask a football player about an old game and he'll tell you, well, in 2010, we were in Detroit and we were playing the Lions and it was third quarter and it was 67 degrees and the wind was blowing 15 miles per hour. And the cornerback took a step this way. And then I did this. And then the safety did this. You're like, oh my God, these guys are geniuses. They're just focused on sports, or like a doctor's focused on medicine. And so it's not an intelligence thing. It's just that they're so focused on one thing, they're not really looking at this stuff and they think they have somebody they can trust.
What's the most outrageous case of scamming you've seen?
My favorite craziest case was down here on South Beach in Miami. This financial advisor, he got a group of athletes to invest in a nightclub. They bought a nightclub. The financial advisor built an office in the back of the nightclub. He had brochures and business cards. He was printing financial plans in the back of the nightclub. And it was the number one hip hop club on South Beach. So you had all these athletes in there every weekend, celebrity hosts. And if an athlete had a table that night, he would tell the VIP host, if he's willing to come and take a meeting with me, I'll comp his table.
Oh, nice.
So he was giving away money that should have went to the players. And meanwhile, this club is bleeding cash. And he keeps getting more athletes to invest in it.
That's genius.
It's evil. But the players don't realize this thing's losing money as he keeps raising more money. Because if you go in there on a Friday night, it's crazy, but they're not actually making money. He ends up marrying one of the dancers at the club.
Nice.
Ultimately, the whole thing goes out of business and everybody loses all their money.
It's crazy because the Ponzi scheme, in essence, keeps going because you keep recruiting new money that you can then use to pay off the older investors for a couple of free bottles.
Right.
They're getting their hooks in.
Well, in this case, Amin, in these allegations, there was a text message from Cohen to Gilder saying, we got to send athlete four more to get rid of him. So, hey, we got to figure out a way to just shut him up. So let's take some more money out of here and let's throw it over this way. And then meanwhile, if they're taking money out of that guy, they got to do the same thing all over again with a new mark, you know?
With a new person. It's like Bernie Madoff, only it's in a nightclub on South Beach. Chase, one of the things that you've been quoted saying is if they'll steal from Mike Tyson, they'll steal from anyone.
Yeah.
Can you explain exactly what you mean by that? Because I love that quote.
I mean, it goes back to sort of that psychopath comment earlier. These guys, they don't care who you are. They don't care what neighborhood you're from. They don't care who your friends are. They have like a mental disorder. Then they don't see the risk and they don't see the moral issues with it. And so they're willing to steal from anyone. You know, you can't just assume it's not going to happen to you.
They stole from Kevin Garnett, man.
I took it as they stole from Mike Tyson, who could literally put his fist through their skull.
Yeah.
They're literally not going to balk at stealing from you because you're Kevin Garnett and you're super intense, or because you're so-and-so and you know people in your old neighborhood, right? To Chase's point, these people have an imbalance in their brain that pushes them to these crimes.
Have you gotten clients in the last couple of weeks as a result of this one that popped up last week, or talked to NBA players about this?
I had an athlete reach out yesterday about that story that I'm talking to, and I think a few more will probably come forward.
Chase, if you had a magic wand and you could either change the laws or change the policies and procedures of the unions or the respective leagues, what would you change to help protect athletes better?
If it was in the union's budget, I would say offer every player a free audit annually or every 2 years and encourage them to actually do it for a relatively small amount of money, given how much money the league generates. I think that would go a really long way.
What would your advice be to an NBA player listening to this podcast right now?
A, do a background check. You know, go to the union, get a free background check. Number two, this is going to sound so obvious, but I'm telling you, so many people don't do it, is Google the people you are dealing with, and not just one or two pages, go all the way. There's so many cases I've worked on that could have been prevented if there was just a Google search. Have checks and balances. So you know, if your agent, your financial advisor, and your CPA are all buddies, who's going to speak up if there's some red flags? Maybe consider separating those three and not having them all be friends. Again, have an audit. And this one may sound selfish, but it's not. Get an investment fraud lawyer. There's hundreds of them around the country. And before you make an investment, run it by the lawyer or have the lawyer review your monthly statements every month. We're talking about a very small amount of money that could save millions over a career.
What is different about Wall Street fraud or real estate fraud versus what we're seeing with pro athletes?
The athletes, like everybody always says, they have a target on their head. They're young. Everybody knows how much money they're making. It's an extraordinary amount of money. And people are just going after them really young. The financial advisors are getting in really early. You know, now the financial advisors are getting the players while they're in college, especially now with the NIL stuff going on. And oftentimes the advisors are now getting in before the agents. And then what happens is the agent business is so hyper-competitive. There's so many agents and so few good players. The agents are so scared to lose a client. They're scared to say to the player, hey, you know, I don't know about this financial advisor. You know, I see some things that bother me because they're scared that the financial advisor is going to get the agent fired because the financial advisor has the better relationship. And so unless the agent sees like an outright theft, the agents are now like scared to do anything. And so it's just a really bad dynamic going on.
It's the perfect crime. I feel for them because everything that would uncover some of this stuff is the same stuff that's acting against them. Right? You can't trust your agent and your CPA and your financial advisor to be all on the same team. So you put them on different teams. So there's a check and balance. But then because of that, they are actively competing against one another because they're all trying to get their own agendas across. I mean, well, let me ask you this. Has it gotten better? Because you hear the stories of the old days of Ewing and Barkley and those guys, and some of those things were really outrageous. Has it gotten better over time in terms of for players, or have they become more sophisticated in the scammers?
I think the trend is that it is getting a bit better. You see this all the time in the NBA. Players are really interested in investing now. A lot of players are doing VC deals, and it's become cool to invest. And so I do think it's gotten a little bit better, but it's still happening all the time, like we just saw last week. So it's going to keep happening, unfortunately.
Do you think more money, we're quoting Biggie Smalls again, more money, more problems is the right mantra here? Is that as the salary cap goes up for the NFL and for the NBA and Major League Baseball, there's no salary cap, but huge $300 million deals. Do you think this will attract more sharks or actually keep them away?
No, it's going to attract way more because when you have a player signing a $200, $300, $400, $500 million deal, when they're now talking about potentially $500 million deals in the NFL, for the average financial advisor, your goal is to manage $100 million. And that can be accomplished with one client. And so it's always going to be sort of that like lottery ticket client for the financial advisors. Like if I could just get one of these guys.
1% of $100 million is $1 million. So like you charge a fee, 1% fee, 5% fee, 10% fee, whatever it is to manage the money. And if a guy's making $100 million, you're willing to take as little a cut as possible to get their business because maybe the next contract is going to be for $500 million, right? So you want to retain that business. But on a $100 million deal, that's $1 million that you just got one client.
Well, and for the financial advisors, it's $1 million per year because it's the percentage of how much money you're managing. And so as long as that money's invested, you're making $1 million per year. And so they're always going to be wanting those clients because as the money gets bigger, I mean, those are going to be some of the best clients in the world.
So let's say you're an NBA player or someone associated with the league, NFL player who has questions about this. How do they reach out to you, Chase, and where can they find outlets for them to follow up?
I'm on Twitter, Chase A. Carlson, and my website's carlsonlaw.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for shedding light on this. It's a all too common story, all too hidden story. And as we like to do on this podcast, we like to shine a light on some of the shadowy areas of the NBA. And this certainly is one that needs more light on. So thanks so much for sharing your expertise here. And hopefully we won't have to have you on again.
Hopefully not. Thanks, guys.
guys see this?
What?
Oh my God. They can't get enough. They keep slapping at Tom and slapping at Tom.
What? What?
For their demoted brother, Ben
God
Taylor.
Damn it. It's not demoted. It's downgraded.
Whatever, whatever.
For the last time.
Sure. Okay. But anyways.
Glad we're not recording this. Jesus.
On Monday night, they put out a tweet announcing who the crew chief was going to be for Mavs Pacers. And guess whose mug was plastered all over it, Maze? The one and only Ben Taylor. Now ask me, Maze, ask me, did they have that for any other games?
Well, surely it was the only game of the night.
It was not the only game of the night. There were several games being played, and yet that's the only tweet we got. One more f*** you to Tom Havistrow.
Oh, come on!
Look at our guy go.
Come on, no way this is true. No way this is true.
Look at Tom beefing with an account with less followers than him at official NBA refs.
You're punching down, Tom. That's what they tell me when you do that.
Wait, is it really just the only tweet they had that day?
That was the only one they announced. 8 games on Monday night. The only tweet they had.
There are 8 games, yes, but they do this for the national TV games. Did you notice in that tweet right there, it says at NBA TV right there, okay? Tired of this.
Maze. Now I think that Tom is like a deep state operative.
What are you talking about?
Are we sure that this is the same Tom that we did the podcast with before? I mean, are we sure he hasn't been replaced?
Now, call me crazy, but let's just say the word that's on everybody's mind clearly.
Demoted.
Clones. Oh, shit.
Downgraded!